Wisconsin is infamous for its drinking culture. While some see it as a badge of honor, it does come with health consequences. But long before old fashions and Wisconsin-made beers became our first choices at a happy hour, cocktails and beer were prescribed to us by health practitioners of various sorts, not bartenders. Alcohol has a long history of attempted medicinal use. Our next guest has a new book that traces back through the history of when beer was expected to treat the flu or brandy could cure malaria, or so people hoped. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the history of alcohol as medicine? Did you have something like this in your family where a little bit of blank was given you for an upset stomach or whatever, maybe when you were a kid even? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Camper English is a cocktails and spirits writer who has contributed to dozens of publications and runs his own bartending blog called Alcademics. He's the author of the new book, Doctors and Distillers, the remarkable medicinal history of beer, wine, spirits, and cocktails. Camper, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the disclaimer. You say this in your book. You're here writing about the history of attempted uses of alcohol as medicine. You are not prescribing these various cures throughout the millennia.
Absolutely not. Talk to your doctor for medicinal issues. If you want a great drink, that's when you go to your bartender.
Excellent. Okay, now let's go back even to the beginning of alcohol, of beer and wine. It was used as kind of a health supplement because when you started to gather lots of people in civilization, we didn't know how to keep drinking water clean. Can you talk about some of those early uses of our beer and our wine?
Sure. There was great attempts to avoid drinking water from surface water anyway, from rivers and lakes and streams and things like that, all of which today we know is contaminated from microbes. But back then it was just known to be unhealthy. And so the regular drink for people building the pyramids in Egypt, for example, would be beer. You know, it's made from grain, so it has calories and nutritional aspects to it and some minerals from the fermentation from the yeast. And it was also boiled in the process of making it, very importantly, to kill all those microbes from the water. And when it came to wine, you don't often need to add water in order to ferment wine into its final form. Although the Greeks and the Romans liked to water it down, and they considered full strength wine to be really uncivilized, like taking a swig out of the jug of whiskey today.
And if I'm building a pyramid, I would feel much safer knowing that the people also building the pyramid weren't really drunk. This is pretty low alcohol by volume beer we're talking about, right?
Absolutely. And the grains could be re-fermented a second time. And later in Victorian England and things like that, that was known as small beer and was probably only 2% ABV or something like that, where the original beer would be still only probably 5% or something. So it wasn't about creating a drunk and docile workforce at all. It was just a healthy, hydrating mineral water of its day.
And you trace from ancient times through medieval and beyond, oftentimes the practice of medicine, such as it was, there was some overlap with the use of alcohol. What stands out to your mind when you think back on what you've written about, you know, how alcohol was used and overlapped with early medicine?
Well, one thing that was a real surprise for me to learn was that distilled alcohol in particular was created only in the context of medicine. There was no beverage use designated for it. It was the alchemist, they'd use distillation to try to create the philosopher's stone to turn lead into gold. And similarly, they would use distillation to preserve things like rose water or wormwood water or things like that with water-based medicine. And once the technology got good enough around the year 1200 or so, we see documentation of like, oh no, if you put wine in the still, this is the greatest medicine ever created. We're going to call it the water of life. It's so good. I always thought that was just a superlative term given to brandy because it's so delicious. But it turns out that was speaking to its revivifying and supposedly health-giving properties of distilled alcohol. And for the next 200 years, people just, that's all they could talk about was, this is really, truly the best medicine ever created. And only later do we find evidence of like, hey, probably don't drink so much medicine all at once because it's not going to create a healthy environment for you.
And this overlap, and I didn't really know about this, in the worlds of alchemy, through the worlds of beer brewing, a lot of things we know in medicine now and in chemistry came from those early alchemy experiments or, oh, hey, if we can control these microbes, we can make better beer. Well, there was some health benefit to figure out about those microbes, too. A lot of our modern health came from this.
Yeah, it's fascinating how the actual study of naturally carbonated water led to the understanding that air wasn't one gas, but was made up of several different elemental gases. And then that led to things like understanding individual elements, as well as later to anesthesia and using gases for other purposes. And then specifically with Louis Pasteur, the study of bacteria in wine and beer led to disproving spontaneous generation and directly to the germ theory of disease, one of the most important concepts in medicine, that there are these invisible microbes that spread disease. And it's not the miasma, the swamp gas that was thought to spread disease between person to person, is actually going to be germs. And then that quickly led to things like anesthetics, antibiotics, and things that kill germ, again, using alcohol as a solution.
Talking to Camper English about his new book, Doctors and Distillers, The Remarkable Medicinal History of Beer, Wine, Spirits, and Cocktails. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Kathleen is with us in Eau Claire. Kathleen, hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. What do you want to tell us about, Kathleen?
Well, my family moved to northern Italy in the early 60s, and at the time, my youngest brother was a baby, was 6 months old. We lived in a hotel for probably 3 or 4 months while my parents were looking for an appropriate place to live. So we had dinner every night in the hotel dining room, in the hotel restaurant, and the baby would be fussy perhaps or crying or something every single night. The waiters would want to give the baby wine. Senora, senora, vino. But no, my mother was not about to do that.
Kathleen, thanks for the call. Vino for the Bambino, Camper. You don't need to go all the way to Italy. This happened in my family. I think a lot of people listening at some point in their family history, this happened. And even you talk about patent medicines and things like that. There was a product called gripe water for colicky babies. Kathleen's not alone here.
Yeah, there were actually several advertisements, particularly with Italian bitter liqueurs, where they would be recommended specifically for children. They would even contain iron for extra nutrition back when there were a lot of iron deficiencies. But I would say, you know, a spoonful of this alcoholic herbal medicine, maybe whip it up with an egg for your children every night. And it wasn't just for crying, but to give some medicine to the a daily dose for children. And it's amazing that it was advertised really specifically for that, knowing what we know today.
Thanks a lot for that call. Let's go to Steve now on the line in Stoughton. Steve, hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. Three things that from my personal experience. One, my grandmother always said whiskey on the gums of a teething child. Mm-hmm. And you know, we did it and it worked. The other was they're finding a lot of value of flavonoids, and I like hoppy beer. So hops have a lot of flavonoids. So I continue to think that's a medicinal in use. And then finally, the hot toddy, which I swear by when you're not feeling good with a cold.
Steve, thanks a lot. Wow, Steve hit a lot of stuff in your book there, Camper. Take it where you want to go.
Well, sure. In my family, it was you dip the pacifier in whiskey for the teething kid rather than put it directly on their gums. But for hops are not just a flavoring agent for beer, they're a preservative. And it turns out a lot of spices that we know today, they're all antimicrobial and would do the same thing. Wormwood, which we know from absinthe today, was used at one point just like hops is today. Into the beer. It both makes it taste more bitter, but it also would help it last much longer. And so there are a lot of different healing aspects prescribed to these herbs, but I think the hops is really more there and became more common for its preservative qualities overall. And the hot toddy in the era of the global flu epidemic of 1919, formerly known as the Spanish flu, the doctors would report like we couldn't really help we couldn't do anything for them but give them a little bit hot toddy to soothe them at the end. Although often we do find bitters in those hot toddies as well, which would have a lot of stomach soothing properties as well.
Thanks for the call, Steve. And Steve is calling from Stoughton, which made me want to talk to you about bitters because I didn't know this. The first big, I guess, English brand name of bitters was Stoughton bitters. And these were totally coming from a world of attempted health treatments, right?
Absolutely. It's Stoughton's bitters in particular, which were patented around the very end of the 1700s in England. Those make their way into the original cocktail, which was not the generic name for all mixed drinks, but a specific one that included a dash of medicine in it, Stoughton's bitters. And then that changed forms over the years and became used with other bitters in America. And it was actually a drink meant to soothe the stomach. And it came from the era before ice was common in cocktails. So it was a warm morning hangover drink to soothe the stomach with those medicinal bitters in there. And I can't think of anything less appealing that I would want in the morning.
We're talking to cocktails and spirits writer Camper English about his new book. It's called Doctors and Distillers, The Remarkable Medicinal History of Beer, Wine, Spirits, and Cocktails. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you heard claims about medicinal benefits of alcohol? Do you have that family story of using blank alcohol to cure blank condition? Do you have questions for our guest about his work? He goes back millennia up to the present day on this stuff. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Oh, have you ever drunk bitters on a particular bar, on a particular island off the coast of Wisconsin? We'll talk about that coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Camper English, cocktails and spirits writer. His new book is called Doctors and Distillers, The Remarkable Medicinal History of Beer, Wine, Spirits, and Cocktails. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Monique is with us in Stevens Point. Monique, hi.
Hi, nice to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, what did you want to bring up, Monique?
So my son brews mead. Because my husband and I are local beekeepers, and so we provide him with the local organic honey to make mead. And when he started making it and I became such a huge fan, we did a little bit of research into it, and it turns out that mead was one of the original drinks given for people on their honeymoon for helping make babies.
Huh. All right. Monique, thanks for sharing that. A great family story, growing the making the honey and making the mead together. Camper, did you run across a mead-related health claims?
Yeah, there are a few throughout different eras in history because honey, of course, predates sugar as a sweetener in Western Europe and in the United States. And honey in different drinkable forms, particularly with vinegars and things like that, was used for hydrating. And it was also used to cover the bitter flavor, a lot of more medicinal herbs. And so we find it used for a lot of different things over the eras, or just used as an ingredient in them. But even today, there are honey-based burn treatments because honey is very much antibacterial. That's why it can last for so long without spoiling. And it can use to sort of cover or coat and seal up a wound and help recovery in some ways. And that's used in some over-the-counter burn treatments that you can find online.
Monique, thanks a lot for that call. Great story at 800-642-1234. Now, we were talking about bitters earlier. You referenced in the book Nelson's Hall and Bitters Club on Washington Island here in Wisconsin. People go there to do shots of bitters often. And part of that story happens during Prohibition, where because it was a medicinal use, they got to keep serving booze, even though most places couldn't. This was not uncommon. There was a lot of prescription alcohol out there.
Oh, absolutely. During Prohibition, the ways that people could drink were either by prescription, and then you could go to your pharmacy and just pick up a bottle of whiskey with your prescription, or medicines that had a base of alcohol, whether they were really trying to treat anything or not, could be purchased over the counter, likely without a prescription. So that's where we find things like bitters were fully available to purchase, and that gripe water that you mentioned earlier, these mother's helpers, so to speak, and things of that nature. It's also where we got Jake Leg, which was a horrible condition caused by people drinking an unsafe medicine, which caused a condition where the legs didn't work properly anymore. And that was during the same period with people choosing the medicinal alternatives as a way to get alcohol out of their medicine.
We'll go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Hi. Oh, this brings back a lot from the past. Oh, there's so many things. One of them that's really hard to find is Rock and Rye. It was a rye whiskey, and it had big chunks of citrus fruit in the bottle. And when you had a cold, you had that. And we used to have that when we were kids, believe it or not, when you really were congested. You just had a little glass of Rock and Rye.
Gail, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, I had Faygo Rock and Rye soda as a kid. This is something different. You write about the Rock and Rye that Gail's talking about, Camper.
I do. And actually, there was beyond Rock and Rye, there were Rock and Rum and Rock and Gin. And the rock refers to rock candy that was used to sweeten them. And there were also minty herbs in there, like whorehound was a notable herb, along with the citrus. And they were kind of generally feel-good medicines. What it really is, it's an old fashioned all mixed up together, and you can have that hot or cold. But they were to soothe conditions, particularly with the lungs and coughs and cold and consumption, as it was called, that we know it as tuberculosis today, to soothe those issues. And there are still some commercial rock and rye back on the market today.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Camper English about his new book, Doctors and Distillers, The Remarkable Medicinal History of Beer, Wine, Spirits, and Cocktails. Camper, a story just popped into my head from my life. I can't believe I didn't think of this while I was reading it. I'm 9 years old. I have a sore throat and a cough like I often did when I was a kid. My Polish grandparents are over. I'm coughing, clearing my throat, and my grandpa says what he needs is a hooker. And after the shocked silence, he explains, no, he didn't mean I needed a prostitute. A hooker was what they called. It was slang for a shot that you took to, you know, clear out your throat. Have you run across shots of alcohol for 9-year-olds or otherwise as a sore throat cure?
Well, I got to admit, a lot of times before I give a talk or a Zoom interview, I might moisten my throat with a little bit of whiskey for just that reason.
I'll let my bosses know I do not do that on the air. I don't think the FCC allows that. Camper, I want to spend a little time on a really weird period of American health history. The patent medicines, many of which featured alcohol, plus heroin and cocaine and strychnine. Talk about some of the alcohol-laced patent medicines we used to have.
Well, sure. So early whiskey was the alcohol of America. And so we find a lot of whiskey-based medicines in particular. For a while, those were homemade remedies that you'd read about in like West Frontier medicine books. But then they became commercialized products that were heavily advertised and, you know, not always safe, often not safe. And often they didn't treat the things that they were advertised to cure. And so we find a lot of quinine, a lot of mercury and things like that in these patent medicines. Snake oil was a subcategory of patent medicine. And of course, that's now the name for fake medicines, but snake oil was a particular type of patent medicine supposedly made with rattlesnakes in America. And it may come from a Chinese tradition, but it wasn't really made with snakes. There was just a real shyster behind the famous snake oil, and he got busted later on. And after 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Law in America took care of actually a lot of the false advertisement in medicine, along with false additives in food and false additives and colorants in alcohol. So those were all wrapped up together in this era of the late 1800s of just garbage medicine, garbage alcohol, and garbage food. And that made its way eventually into what became the FDA.
And you mentioned quinine. Now, this is one of the success stories of alcohol and medicine. Quinine, which is in that tonic water, does help with malaria. It's mixed with gin. Why did gin become part of this two-part cure?
Well, I think really the British soldiers were just putting gin in everything as a refreshment. The quinine in the fizzy water comes from the belief that the fizzy water was in fact good for you as well. So it was a natural to, they put quinine in everything, and it's still in a lot of Italian and French bitter liqueurs on the market today. We just don't, we only think of it as being in tonic water, but it's in hundreds of products. Alcoholic beverages because of its history treating fevers and malaria in particular. The gin, I think, was really just along for the ride, but the juniper and gin had its own medicinal quantities that it was known for, particularly as a diuretic.
And having gone through the book Camper, is there a cure you've tried yourself, if I may ask?
I didn't try anything that I haven't tried already, I would say, but I do
probably
really
smart.
Sort of believe in digestifs a little bit more than I used to, and understand that things like gentian that's in those bitters, you can throw a dash of that in with your fizzy water, and it not only tastes great, but it might help, speed the digestion a little bit, make you feel a little bit less full a little bit faster than you did.
Camper, thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Camper English, cocktails and spirits writer and speaker. He was with us today to talk about his new book. It's called Doctors and Distillers, The Remarkable Medicinal History of Beer, Wine, Spirits, and Cocktails.